we're doing Gemara Megillah, special class on the Agadah, the parts of the Gemara which analyze the Megillah itself. And we're going to begin in the tractate Megillah, the Yud Amud Beis, Yud B. And we're going to start four lines before the lines get wide. The beginning of the Megillah is the first words of the Megillah, Vayehi Bimei Achashverosh. It was in the days of Achashverosh. Amar Rabbi Levi. Rabbi Levi said, V'item Rabbi Yonatan. Others say it was Rabbi Yonatan that said, Davar zeh masot be'edeinu manshei kneset ha'gdola. We have the following tradition. Kol makom she'nemar vayehi eino ela leshon tzar. Any time you encounter the word vayehi, it reflects that it was a time of sorrow. Here you have vayehi bimei Achashverosh, ha've haman. It's introducing vayehi, sounds like vayehi, oh woe. Haman's coming to the scene. So that's going to be the center focus of the Megillah. Let's skip down to the line that says Sheni. The beginning of the line is Sheni. We're skipping down about nine lines. See, it says Sheni in the beginning of the line. The Gemara questions from many different sources. It quotes some sources that work with this, and many sources that seem to be innocent verses that say Vayehi, and it was the first day of creation, the second day of creation, the third day of creation. What sorrow is there in that? So the Gemara says, Sheni ve'ika shlishi ve'ika tuva. You have many examples where it says Vayehi, and you can't say they all mean sorrow. Amar Rav Ashi, so Rav Ashi explains, kol Vayehi, anytime you encounter the word Vayehi in Tanakh, ika hachi, there are those that are this way, ve'ika hachi, and there are those that are that way. There's no rule. Sometimes it connotes sadness and sometimes not. But you want to know the rule? Vayehi bimei eino ela leshon tzar. When you see the words, and it was in the days of, that's telling you something sad's about to happen. Chamisha vayehi bimei avu. Five times in Tanakh, you have this opening sentence, and it was in the days of. Vayehi bimei achashverosh. It was in the days of achashverosh, so we know what happened then. That's when Haman came to power. In the days of the judges, there was a famine. In the days of the king Amraphel, there was a war. He took the throne and he caused the Jewish people to sin. He was overtaken by the Babylonian Empire. Okay. We have a few more quotes which are very interesting, but we have to skip to get to the parts that are relevant to us. And let's skip a few lines. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 lines. And the line ends with the word pitcha. See the last word on the line, pitcha? Okay, so Rabbi Yonatan patach la pitcha. When Rabbi Yonatan would teach the Megillah, Megillah's Esther, he'd begin with the following introduction. Lehai parshata, when he teach this parsha of Megillah Esther, he'd begin with Mehacha, with the following verse. If he was going to teach Megillah, he'd begin with the quote from Isaiah. God says, I will destroy the first temple. I will bring in the Babylonian Empire. They will destroy. And then I will turn back against the Babylonian Empire. Vekamti alehem, I will rise against them, the Babylonian Empire. Vehichati lebavel, and I will destroy from Babylon. Shem ushar, a name, a remnant, v'nin v'neched, and a grandson or any person of importance. Neum Hashem, so says Hashem. So God says, I'm going to take Babylon to task over the destruction of my temple. Yes, I decreed the destruction, but I also decreed that I'm going to take Babylon back to task. So he defines the pasuk. It says God will remove from Babylon Shem Zaktav. That means that the writing, they don't have their own writing. The Babylonian Empire is not really its own empire. They have to use someone else's form of writing. They don't have their own alphabet. Shal Zelashon, their language is going to become obsolete. You don't see people talking Babylonian today. How many people do you see talking Aramaic today? Nin Zemalchut, God says, I will abolish from Babylon their kingdom. So that's true. Their whole kingdom was abolished. Vaneched, God says, I will remove even a grandson, Zuvashti. So when Rabbi Yonasan came to teach the Megillah, what's it telling us? The first thought he gave when he was teaching the Megillah was, God is going to pay back Babylon for destroying the temple. Meaning, our approach to Megillah Esther is, this is the payback for the destruction of the temple. You see, the killing of Vashti, which is the opening lines of the Megillah, that's something which seems superfluous. What do we need it here? I'm not talking to you. What do we need the whole killing of Vashti in the Megillah? The whole story is the story of the victory of Mordechai and Esther and the hanging of Haman. Why do we have the whole first section about Vashti? So it tells us, Rabbi Yonasan, no, that's closure. God says, I'm going to still take Babylon down over the destruction of the temple. And as we will see, the Megillah really revolves around the theme of the temple, that place where God connects to humanity, the Temple Mount, the temple itself. And so when Rabbi Yonasan came to teach the Megillah, he'd begin with that line. He'd say, God promised to destroy any remnants of Babylon, and that finally came true with the killing of Vashti in the beginning of the Megillah. So the Megillah, when it describes to us the killing of Vashti, is really describing a certain revenge that God takes from the Babylonian Empire. And if you think about it, there's a fantastic thing at play here. What do they do with that feast? They use the vessels from the temple. They say it's over. God's never going to rebuild this temple. What's God really doing at that feast? God's saying it's over on you. I'm going to finish off my revenge for your destroying my temple at this feast. They think they're pulling the events of history in one direction, when in fact God is guiding history in a completely different direction. They think they can celebrate that the Jewish people are no longer the chosen people, and God is showing them, no, quite the contrary. I'm running the show, and what's really going to happen at this party is that those who destroyed my temple will meet their end. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi patach la pit. I skipped. I'm sorry. Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani patach la pitra la parshat mehacha. Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani, when he came to teach the story of the Megillah, he'd begin with the following verse. It says again in the prophecies of Yeshaya, Isaiah says, "Tachat ha'na'atzutz." In place of this thorn bush, Ya'aleh v'rosh, will grow a great cedar, a great tree. The tachat ha-sirpad, and instead of the sirpad plant, Ya'aleh hadas, the myrtle will grow. So that verse, he explained, means tachat ha-natsutz, tachat ha-man ha-rasha. That means when it talks about the natsutz, that's a code for Haman the wicked. In place of Haman the wicked, Ya'aleh, That Natsutz is a reference to Haman. Why? Haman declared himself a god. Haman made himself into an idol to be worshipped. And so Hashem foretold through the prophet Yeshaya that in his place, in place of that man, that thorn bush, who makes himself into a god, will rise up Berosh. How does Avodah Zarah come to mean Natsutz? How do we see that? Because the verse says God will destroy the idols, and he calls them uvechol anatzutzim uvechol analulim. God calls the destruction of the idols the destruction of the thorn bushes. So that's how you see in the same prophecy of Isaiah, God refers to idols as thorn bushes. So when God says, in place of the natsutz, instead of the thorn bush, will grow the berosh, that's a reference to instead of an idol, that's Haman, will grow the berosh. How is berosh Mordechai? Berosh ze Mordechai shenikra rosh lekol ha-psamim. The name Mordechai has been the source of a lot of research. People have delved into why did they call him Mordechai. And modern researchers like to say all kinds of things. They say there was a Persian god named Marduk, and they want to say all kinds of things about why he was called Mordechai. So the Gemara also has an interpretation why he's called Mordechai. The Gemara says Mordechai is named after the first of the spices in the Ketores. Shenikra Rosh Lechol HaPsamim. He is named after the first of the spices. That's why instead of the na'atzutz, instead of the man who made himself into an idol, will come up the berosh, the first spice, which is Mordechai. How is he the first spice? Because the first spice, it says, "Shenemal v'ata kach lecha b'samim rosh." Take for yourself the first spice for spices of the Ketores, mor diror. What does mor diror mean? It's a type of spice. Targuminam, the translation of mor diror is mare dachi, pure mor, whatever mor is. For a minute, we'll ignore that for a second. So mare dachi is like mor dechai. Mor dechai. Mor, the spice mor, dechai, that's pure. That's the first spice of the Ketores. So it says, in place of the Natsuts will arise the Rosh, the first spice, that's Mordechai. Tachat ha-Sirpad, instead of the Sirpad plant, that's instead of Vashti the wicked. Tachat Vashti Arsha bat Noshen Buchanetzer ha-Rasha, shesarap refidat Beit Hashem. He, Sirpad, the Medrash is learning, is saraf refida. He burnt, so to speak, the resting place of Hashem. He burnt down the temple. Yaleh Hadas will grow the Hadas. And we know that Esther's code name in the Megillah is Hadassah. Yaleh Hadas zu Esther, Hatzadeket, Shenikret Hadassah, Shneimah Vayhi Omenet Hadassah. So that's how he'd begin his speech. What's the point of all this? Vayal Hashem Leshem. This will all be a great fame for Hashem. Zumikra Megillah. That's the reading of the Megillah, the Ot Olam. The verse says this will be a sign for eternity. Lo Yikaret, it will never be undone. Elu Yimei Purim. That's a reference to Purim. So what's Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmani stressing here? He's coming to teach the Megillah, and his opening line is, God says things will be overturned in the world. The thorn bushes will be overturned into great plants. The sirpad will be overturned into hadas. And all of this is for God's fame. So sometimes in life, we have to recognize that there's God's hand turning things back and forth. A person might look at the story of the Megillah and say, they played good politics, Esther and Mordechai. They knew how to wheel and deal. Tells us Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani, he says, you got to see, the prophet already told us this is going to happen. The prophet in Isaiah, even before the destruction of the temple, prophesied about things being changed from what we think. We're going to see idol worshippers or people who proclaim themselves as idols exceptionally successful. Wait, God has a different plan. So we have a lot of introductions. The whole next page is a discussion of how different rabbis would introduce the Megillah. You guys want to run through it? Yeah? Okay, so we'll run through it. But maybe I'll translate the general theme instead of translating word by word. Is that okay? Or do you guys want the translation word by word? General theme. Okay. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi patach lapitrala parshat ha-mehachat. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, he'd begin teaching the Megillah with the following verse. It says, God says, if you don't keep my Torah, v'ayaka asher sas Hashem alechem le'etiv etchem, ken yasis le'ara etchem. Then what's going to happen is just as Hashem was happy to make things good for you, He'll make happy over doing bad to you. So that's how he'd begin his speech. The introduction to the Megillah. You don't keep the Torah. Hashem says, just like I made you happy when you kept the Torah, well, I could turn the tables on you. I'll make it happy over being bad to you. So the Gemara automatically questions, is God really happy when the wicked fall? Okay, we were wicked. We didn't do what we should have done. But is God happy about that? Is that what it's saying? The active, but it says, it brings one verse that indicates that not, and it brings another proof. Okay, we'll read through it. It says, when God sends out, when harm is coming to the world, they give praise. But they don't say, Hodu Lashem Kitov Kilolam Chasdo. So to speak, God is saying it's not good. I'm not so happy when bad things happen in the world, even if I have to punish people. Rabbi Yochanan also taught, "My dichtiv lo krav ze ezekol alayla." What does the verse mean when it says the Egyptian camp and the Israeli camp were camped on two sides, and they didn't come close all night? The words "they didn't come close all night" is not talking about the camps down below. It's talking about what was happening in heaven. The heavens in the angels in heaven wanted to sing that night the way they do every night. Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, God said, Maasei Yadai Tovim Bayam Atem Omrim Shira. How could you sing? The Egyptians are also human beings. You can't sing up in heaven. when my creations are drowning? How many of you guys davened about Japan? I davened about Japan. They're not Jews, but they're human beings. God doesn't want them dead either. I mean, obviously he does on some level, otherwise this wouldn't be happening. But we have a responsibility to the world. Chazal teach us that Hashem is not happy, even when wicked people die. So then what does it mean? He'd begin with the verse, just as God was happy with you when it was good, he made happy when it was bad. So Rabbi Elazar explains, Zuei nosas av l'achirim nesis. But Lazar says, God isn't happy when bad things happen to even to wicked people. But what God does is that when he punishes a person, he can make other people happy about it. And that's one of the cruel parts of the Megillah. The Megillah repeatedly points out how people could sit and drink wine after they've decided to annihilate a whole people. The Megillah points out, V'amelech v'aman yashavu lishtot. They sign a decree, we'll kill men, women, children. They send out the decree, go do pogroms, kill out the Jewish people, and they sit down to drink wine. The Megillah points it out subtly. V'amelech v'aman yashavu lishtot. They sat down to party. We have a halacha that says that if a court decrees the death penalty for any individual, he deserved it. The guy murdered the guy deserved it, whatever it was. The halacha says they're not allowed to eat the rest of the day. They have to fast until nightfall. But the guy deserved the death penalty, doesn't it? So what? Halacha says they're not allowed to eat the rest of the day. Hashem says, what the verse says is, just as God was happy with you when it was good, he will make others happy when things go bad. Meaning this is part of the punishment. That Hashem says, the people who do evil will party. They're going to have a good time as they're doing bad. And that's part of the punishment. That doesn't say Hashem is happy. Hashem is not happy when bad things happen, even to evil people. Even so, God is not happy. But he does let other people enjoy being evil. Hashem says that's part of the punishment. So that was the introduction to the Megillah that Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi gave. He said, when bad things happen and people are enjoying that bad things are happening to us, so you guys know over Shabbos they were giving out free candy to kids in Gaza. They were celebrating the murder of our children. You guys, you're aware of that, yeah? Yeah, sure. Well, it's written in the Torah already. The Torah says when Hashem decides to punish, he might also make other people happy as we suffer, happy over our own suffering. And that was Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi's introductory remark when he was about to teach the Megillah. It's a, let's get perspective about what we're about to learn. Why is that so important? If you think about it, we discussed in the beginning of the week that it's easier for us to swallow an earthquake and a tsunami than the murder of people that happened Friday night. The murder of people that happened Friday night, we see two evil individuals walking into a home and murdering in cold blood. So you feel more like, how did they get away with it? There was a human being involved. There was an evil human being involved. When there's a tsunami, when there's an earthquake, we feel like that's God. That's nature. We couldn't do anything about that. But the truth is that what Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi was teaching us is that although from our perspective, we have to pursue the murderers. We have to react. We have to protect. We have to act as though what's happening is in our hands. We also have to recognize that God's running the show. That on some level, God let that happen. There's a message in it for us. And so, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi introduces the Megillah with that theme. Yes, people celebrated as they were signing the decrees for the Jews to be annihilated. But you have to realize that God forewarned us. You don't keep the Torah, then that's the direction it's going to go. We're continuing five lines from the bottom, the end of the line. Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana, when he would teach the Megillah, Patach Lapitro La Parshat HaMehacha, he'd start the Megillah with the following. It says in Ecclesiastes, it says in Koheles. Those of you who want, we have more Gemaras here. If any of you want to follow inside. La'adam she'tov lefanav, natan chokhmah v'dat v'simcha. When someone is good before God, God gives him wisdom and knowledge and happiness. Zeh Mordechai Tzadik. He began his teaching saying, that verse is talking about Mordechai the righteous. V'lachoten natan inyan le'esof v'lichnos. And then to a sinner, God makes him spend his life gathering a lot of wealth, and that's a reference, Zeh Haman, that's talking about Haman, Latet L'Tov L'Fnei Elokim, because God's plan is this guy will amass all his wealth, and ultimately it's going to go to those who find favor in Hashem's eyes. That's a reference to Mordechai and Esther. Dichtiv Atas Mestel Mordechai El Bet Haman. That's what we find. The Megillah concludes with all of Haman's wealth being transferred to Mordechai and Esther. So again, what's Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana telling us? What's the theme we're supposed to take away from the Megillah? Sometimes you see someone wicked succeeding. Sometimes you see someone who doesn't seem to deserve it is having it good in life. The Megillah teaches us, yeah, sometimes God is setting it up the way God was setting up Haman, the way God was setting up Haman to give over his wealth to Mordechai. Let's skip to Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, the next page, the first wide line. The middle of the line. Reish Lakish patach lapitcha laparshata mehacha. When Reish Lakish would come to teach the Megillah, he'd begin with the following. I know we were supposed to have our learning tonight, because Rav Kaplan isn't here, so they gave us a special class on the Megillah. When Reish Lakish taught the Megillah, he'd begin with the following verse. The verse describes Ari Noem, the lion huffs, so to speak. He lets out his purr. Vidov Shokek, and the bear makes his sound. Moshel Rasha Alam Dal, a wicked ruler over an impoverished nation. What's this talking about? Ari Noem, the lion is Nebuchadnezzar HaRasha. Tichtiv al Ariyem Subcho. When Nebuchadnezzar is about to attack, the prophet describes his attack as a lion coming out of his den. So the beginning of the verse that says the lion is, that's a reference to our destruction at the hands of Nebuchadnezzar. Dov Shokek, the bear, who's that a reference to? Zachashverosh. That's a reference to Achashverosh, as it says that Daniel had a dream. Dichtiv Be, it says about Achashverosh that in Daniel's dream he saw, V'aru, and behold, chiva achorit inyan adam yaledov. He saw a second wild animal enter the scene, and that one was like a bear. That's V'tani Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef taught Elu Palsim. That's a reference to the Persian people. Shochlin v'shotin kedov. They devour so much food and they drink so much. They're like bears. Umsurbalim basal kedov, and they're corpulent. They're fat like bears. They're covered with layers of fat. Umgalim sal kedov, and they grow hair like bears. They got hair all over their chest and all over their back, and they're like hairy people. So that's when Daniel sees in the dream a second wild animal entering the scene, which is the second kingdom that's going to rule. That's and it's like a bear. That's a code for the Persian Empire. Then lemenucha kedov, and they're antsy people. They never can settle down like a bear. The verse continues and says, Moshel Rasha, a wicked king, Zehaman. That's a reference to Haman, a wicked ruler. Because Haman wasn't king. He was wicked. He was running the show, but he wasn't king. He was a Moshel. He was the one running the show, but he wasn't Melech. He wasn't king. Alam Dal, over an impoverished nation, that's Israel. Yisrael Shem Dalim Min HaMitzvot. We're impoverished from our mitzvos. Rabbi Elazar Patach La Pitcha La Parshat HaMehacha. When Rabbi Elazar would begin teaching the Megillah, he'd begin with the following. Let's skip. Let's skip down to the Shmuel Amal. Okay, you know what? Maybe we'll skip to the beginning. We saw a lot of introductions. Let's go on to the actual Megillah now. See where it says in the beginning of the line Lachem, about halfway down the line, halfway down the Amud. Lachem, next to the Beis, right? You have a Beis of Branches, and it says the word Lachem here. You got it? Lachem? Okay. 10 o'clock. But maybe we'll stop. You guys want to take a break, ask some questions, and then continue? Want to continue or have questions and answers for a few minutes? Continue? Okay. The Gemara continues and says, Achashverosh. The name Achashverosh wasn't his real name. Meaning the kings, the Persian kings had multiple names. They were called Koresh, Daryavish, Achashverosh. And those were all titles like Pharaoh. So then the question is, why is the Megillah focusing on the name Achashverosh? It's like president. He has many names. Leader, president, whatever. So Achashverosh, why was he called that name throughout the Megillah? Amar Rav, Achiv Shel Rosh Uben Gilo Shel Rosh. Achashverosh is like saying he's the brother of the head. Achiv Shel Rosh, the brother of the head. That's Achiv Shel Nebuchadnezzar HaRasha Shenikra Rosh. It's indicating he's the brother, meaning he's just like Nebuchadnezzar the wicked. Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the temple, he was just like him. Shneimar Antu Reisha Dedava. In the famous dream that Nebuchadnezzar had, the head of gold was a reference to Nebuchadnezzar, to himself. So Nebuchadnezzar is called the head, so that's Achashverosh was just like him. Achashverosh is to indicate he was just like that head of gold. Ben Gilosh Rosh, he behaved just like him. Hu Harag, Nebuchadnezzar murdered thousands, if not millions of Jews. Hu Bikesh La'arog, Achashverosh wanted to do the same. And then God overturned his plan, but really we're going to see Achashverosh was no innocent fellow. My kids were having a discussion. One of them said, Achashverosh is a wicked man. Look at what a decree he made. So little kids. So the other one said, no, he's a tzaddik. Look at him. He annulled his own decree. He helped the Jews and then. Thanks to him, we have Purim. So the Megillah, the Gemara sides with the first kid. The Gemara says, no, he was a wicked man. He really wanted to have pogroms and murder the Jews. As we will see, the Gemara will show us numerous times that Achashverosh was really an evil person. Hu echariv, Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the temple. Hu bikesh la'achiv. Achashverosh wanted to destroy the temple. Meaning, historically, before Achashverosh came to power, the king before him gave us license to rebuild the second temple. We started, Shneimar, and then the verse says, Umalchut Achashverosh b'tchilat malchuto, in the beginning of Achashverosh's reign, Katvus itna l'yoshvei Yehuda v'Yerushalayim, they sent a letter, they sent a libel against us that we're plotting a rebellion, and Achashverosh seized the opportunity to send us a letter, no more building the temple. So Achashverosh was just like Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the temple, Achashverosh would have destroyed it if he only could. The Shmuel Amar Shmuel says, why was he called Achashverosh? Shushru Pnehem Sheyisrael Biyamav Keshulei Kedera. Achashverosh is indication like Shachor, that our faces turned black in his days. He was a horrible king, and we were in dire straits under his rule. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Rabbi Yochanan says, it wasn't only the Jews who had problems with him. He was like Obama, no one liked him. Amar Kol Shuzocho, Amro Ach Lerosh, Lerosho. Anyone who mentioned him said, oy vey, what a president. What's going on here? Those who like peace, don't like him. Those who like the economy, don't like him. Those who like Arabs, don't like him. No one, what can you like that you like a president like that? Say, what can you like? I mean, you know, so Achashverosh was the same way. Everything, it didn't matter what side of the political spectrum you were on. You looked at him, you said to yourself, what's with this guy? Rabbi Chanina amar, shakol nasim rashim biyamav. Rabbi Chanina says, he impoverished everyone. He taxed everyone. That's why it was called Achashverosh. And the stress over here is Rosh. Rosh in Hebrew could mean impoverished. Shneimar, the verse says, Ve'asma me Achashverosh mas. What does the Megillah conclude with? Third to the last verse of the Megillah says, Achashverosh taxed everyone. It's telling you what kind of king he was. No one liked him. And he was taxing everyone. Everyone was, the economy was terrible under him. The Megillah continues and says, Hu Achashverosh. It says, and it wasn't the days of Achashverosh, he is the Achashverosh. That's a way of saying the infamous Achashverosh. Now we have to understand, the Gemara spells out to us hidden messages in the Megillah. When was the Megillah composed? When was it written? The simple understanding is, it was in his lifetime. So here his queen is putting out a book of something to her people about what transpired in the last 10 years. She couldn't exactly write what she thought of this bum. What's she gonna say? So she had to encase everything in nice words. And that's why the Megillah portrays everything it's like folklore as you read the Megillah. It portrays everything in a very nice way, and you have to stop and pause and read between the lines and tell yourself, well, wait, what was Esther really trying to tell us here? The Megillah says, they gathered all the girls and they put them in this harem. We're going to see. The Gemara is going to say, what does it mean they gathered all the girls? When King David wanted a wife, everyone volunteered their daughter. Why is it by Achashverosh it didn't work that way? Anyone who's smart kept his daughter under wraps. Who wants her under his fangs? He's going to rape a girl every night, and finally he's going to decide which one he likes. He does it for a number of years. Every girl who he was with has to go to his second harem, doesn't go back home. Understand what kind of animal he was? Every night another girl gets they're abducted, they're put into the king's harem, and they never leave. That's it, their life's over. But as we're going to see, he ruled the world. He was the most powerful king of the time, and no one could stand up to him. But again, Esther doesn't spell it out. Doesn't say exactly what was happening there. Esther words it nicely, and you got to read between the lines and see what she's telling us. So when it says in the beginning, the opening line of the Megillah is, and it was in the days of Achashverosh, he is the Achashverosh who was king over 127 countries. Why does it say he is the Achashverosh? It's really indicating he is the infamous Achashverosh. This is the Achashverosh who was wicked from beginning to end. No good bone in him. That's also what it says, who Esav. When it says he is Esav, that's indicating he was wicked from top to bottom. Hudatan v'Aviram, when it describes Dasan and Aviram in the Torah, again it's stressing him, they're wicked from top to bottom. Hu HaMelech Achaz, that's also a reference in the Tanakh, Hu B'Rishom Tchito V'Atzofo, that he was wicked from beginning to end. But you know what? It goes for the good too. When it's describing a good person and it says he is, so it says in Divrei Hayomim, Avram Hu Avraham, that's indicating that Abraham was B'Tzidko Mitchilato V'Atzofo, righteous from beginning to end. Hu Aaron Moshe, the Torah is indicating that Moshe and Aaron are hen b'tzidkan mitchilatan v'atzofan. They were righteous from beginning to end. Some people are very good at doing tshuva. They hit the age of 95. They've been doing all kinds of hideous acts their whole life. And suddenly when Madoff is locked behind bars, he says, give me a share tshuva, let me do some tshuva here. It's okay, he can do tshuva, that's fine. But you know what? We don't value him when he does tshuva as much as someone who was a good person from beginning to end. And what the Torah tells us is, Avram, you should know Avram never had a bad day in that sense. He was never an evil person. He was a righteous person. He had his ups, he had his downs, he had his falls, he had his better days and his worst days, but he was never an evil person. He was a kind person from beginning to end. Aaron and Moshe, from beginning to end. David, Hu HaKatan, David was a modest person, a humble person, Hu B'Katnuto Mitchilato Ad Sofo. He was modest from beginning to end, Keshem Shebkatnuto Ktin Atzmo. It's a Misha Gadol Menim B'Torah. Just like when he was little, he was talking next to someone who knew more than him, he'd be humble and say, okay, what do you say? David did the same thing, Kach B'Malchuto, when he was king, Ktin Atzmo Tzal Misha Gadol Menim B'Chochma. You know, David had his Rebbe standing next to him. If people would come in and ask David the Shaila, he'd answer. And then he'd turn to his Rebbe and say, am I right? And sometimes his Rebbe said yes, and sometimes his Rebbe said no. And he'd embarrass David in front of everyone. But David was humble. He said, if there's someone that knows better than me, let me ask them. No. Nadav and Avihu were Aaron HaKohen's sons. Datan and Aviram were from the tribe of Reuven. They were the sons of Eliav. It says Achashverosh was Hamolech, who was king. What's it telling me? He was king over these countries. Amarav Shemalach Me'atzmo. That's indicating that he became a king of his own accord. He didn't come from the royal family. Amrila Leshvach. Some say that's a word of praise for Achashverosh. Amrila Legnai. And others say it's a derogation to him. Amrila Leshvach. Delo Avi Nishpech Dechashiv Lemalka Kavatei. If it's praise, means, look, he didn't come from the royal family, but I guess he was high up there. That when the king was about to die, he didn't appoint anyone else to be king, but rather he appointed Achashverosh. That's pretty good of him. Means Achashverosh was a top man. That's if you interpret it as praise. V'amri la lignai, others say no. It's a shame to Achashverosh. Delo avachazi lemalchuta. That's because he wasn't really fit for king. But he just gave a lot of money and he bribed his way to the position. That's how he became the king. Two interpretations. Now, you will notice time and again, and we'll see this in our Gemaras too, when Chazal tell us someone was terrible, if there's one good thing about him, they tell us that good thing. Chazal tell us that Esav, when he did Kibbut Aveim, he'd wear special clothing to do Kibbut Aveim. He had a special set of clothing when he'd come in front of his father. He had the clothing he wore every day, he had the clothing he wore when he was hunting, and he had the clothing when his father came to town. When he'd go to his father, he changed to his Shabbos suit. So I read that Gemara, and when my father visited a month ago, you gotta take kids on a long trip, you know, you're not sure you're gonna get there looking so good. So I prepared some nice clothing to put on when I got to the airport. I said, we gotta learn from Esav. If Chazal tell us, that Esav wore nice clothing in honor of his father should feel good. Look, my son's dressed nicely. Chazal were very careful to be truthful. When they had a giant like David HaMelech who did something wrong, they told us, they spelled it out, they spent two pages of Talmud discussing what he did wrong. How he did tshuva, but what he did wrong. Chazal were very honest. And when they had a man who's such a rogue like Ahasuerus, if there were some good things about him, they told us that too. Yeah. About David? The Gemara is primarily in Sanhedrin, but it's in other places too. It's in a few places in Sanhedrin. It's in the 10th Perek, and it's also in the 3rd Perek. Second parak, it's in a few places. So here the Gemara says, some say that this is a word of praise for Ahasuerus, that look, he made it to the throne even though he wasn't from the royal blood. It says he was king Mehodu Vad Kush. We're up to five lines before the lines get wide. The first word on the line is Kush. Rav Ishmuel. Chagamar. What does it mean he ruled from Hodu to Kush? So one says, Hodu Pesof Olam Kush Pesof Olam. That Hodu and Kush are at two extremities of the world. So it means he ruled the world. That's what it means, he ruled from Hodu to Kush. Another one says, Hodu and Kush are two countries that live one next to the other. What it means is that he ruled the world just like every country was his neighbor. Just like if you lived in Hodu, you could easily rule over Kush, the neighbor, so too he ruled the whole world. Now, historically, during his reign, they paved the deserts. Meaning that's why in the Megillah you see they talk about horses and you have swift runners like you don't have anywhere else. So Ahasuerus really had an infrastructure set up all over the continent. The Persian Empire developed infrastructure like no other empire had, and that allowed them to really rule with a firm hand over their whole empire because they had these swift horsemen running back and forth and they knew exactly what was going on anywhere. You know, in ancient times, if you had a rebellion far out somewhere, it took a long time till you heard about it. By the time you heard about it, they might have gotten who knows how many countries conquered. But Ahasuerus didn't have that problem. Ordinarily, to travel the desert, you needed camels. Ahasuerus didn't. He could travel the desert with horses because he had paved roads all across the continent. And that was one of the great strengths of the Persian Empire. So this interpretation that says Hodu and Kush were two countries next to one another, but he ruled the whole world. He ruled his whole empire the way he ruled all civilization, right? He didn't rule North America and South America. Probably didn't make it that far in those days. But when we say the world, we mean civilization of that time. So he ruled that the same way as though they were all his neighbors. And the same thing you have in the description of King Solomon. It says, He ruled over all the countries on the other side of the Euphrates from Tifsach till Aza. Rav Ishmuel, Chadamal Tifsach Sof Olam V'Aza Sof Olam. Again, you have the same argument. Are Tifsach and Aza at the two extremities of the world? V'Chadamal Tifsach V'Aza V'Adeh. Adadeh Avikaimin, one says, no, they're neighboring countries. Kishem Shemalach Al Tifsach V'Al Aza, Kach Malach Al Kol Olam Kolo. But it means he had the infrastructure, he was able to rule over the whole world like he ruled Tifsach and Aza. It says that Ahasuerus ruled over Sheva V'Eslim Umah Medina. 7 and 20 and 100 countries. Seems like they mean to say 127. Amar Rav Chisda. Rav Chisda says, no, that's not what it means. It means there was an evolvement in his empire. B'tchila malach al sheva. Initially, Ahasuerus was king over 7 countries. And then, the Ulvasop malach al eslim. And then his empire grew to 20. And then, Ulvasop malach al mea. Then he ultimately ruled over 100. We'll go down two lines, Tanu Rabbanan. The Braisa says, Shlosha malchu bakipa. Three kings ruled bakipa, which is a way of saying ruled the world. Veiluhen, the following three kings. The Judean king of Achav, Achashverosh, and Nebuchadnezzar. And then it brings the verses to prove it. Okay. The Talmud asks, what about King Solomon? What about Sancheiriv? What about Darius? What about Koresh? Weren't there other kings that ruled all of civilization? So, each one the Gemara has a different answer for. Okay. We'll continue. You see the two dots on Ahmed Beis on the second side of the page? You guys want to continue? You have koch? Yes? It says in the Megillah, Bayamim ahim keshevet ha-melech. It says, in those days, as Achashverosh settled down on his throne, and then v'chtiv batrei, right afterwards it says, b'shnat shalosh l'molcho, it was 3 years into his reign. So which one was it? Is the Megillah describing the party when he settled on his throne, or when he was 3 years into his reign? Amar Rav, amai keshevet l'achar shenit yashva dato. It means he settled on his throne because intellectually he came to terms with the following. Amar, he said to himself, Belshazzar chashav v'ta'a. Belshazzar, the Babylonian king, he calculated 70 years that the prophet Jeremiah said would pass from the onset of the Babylonian Empire until the Jews would be redeemed. And Belshazzar said the Babylonian Empire has been around 70 years. It hasn't happened. The Jews have not been redeemed. So that's it. God's forsaken them. And I can trust that the Messiah is never going to come. And the Babylonian Empire can exist forever. That was their focus. That was what everyone was concerned with. Is there ever going to be a Messiah for the Jews? Do they have a future? Belshazzar sat down, did the calculations. He erred in his calculations. And that night he took out the vessels that they had captured from the temple. And he used them in a great feast. And that night a godly hand appeared and wrote on the wall. And no one could figure out what the writing was. They called in Daniel. And Daniel read the writing to them. Daniel says what it says on the wall is that your time is up. God's very upset with what you've done. What a chutzpah. You took God's holy vessels, used them at your meal. You're going to die. You're going to lose your empire. And it's time for the Persian Empire to take over. Belshazzar is all scared. He makes a decree. Tells his servants, if you catch anyone outside, walking outside tonight, you kill him. He's scared. He's going to get killed. Daniel just told him that's it. His kingdom is over. God makes it that Belshazzar himself has to go to the bathroom very badly that night. He walks out of his room. The guards see him. They kill him. So he's dead. And the Persian Empire right then attacks, and the Persian Empire comes, and there's no man in charge. They take over without a fight. They take over the whole Babylonian Empire. Belshazzar is dead, and that's the beginning of the Persian Empire. So Achashverosh sits down. He's the third Persian king. And Achashverosh, third, fourth, he sits down and he starts doing the calculations. God said he's going to take the Jews back after 70 years. He says, my predecessor, Belshazzar, he did the math. He got it wrong. And okay, he's gone. I'm going to do the math. Oh, I got it right. The years are up. God never took the Jews back. So, that's it. I'm going to rule the world forever. I'm going to have a dynasty. And the threat of a Jewish Messiah is behind me. So what does he do? That's why it says, as he settled on his throne. What does it mean he settled on his throne? Amar, he said to himself, Belshazzar chashav etah. Belshazzar did the math, and he erred. Ana chashivna, I did the math, velo teina. I didn't make any mistakes. And then the Gemara goes through the different calculations, how they did the math of their years. If you want, I have it all spelled out online. In the Purim file, and I have it downstairs printed out. You could see all the numbers exactly. What did Jeremiah say? How did God mean to do the calculations? How did they think God meant to do the calculations? And that's why Achashverosh was willing to take out the temple vessels for his party that night, because he figured it's over, that there's never going to be a temple again. The Jews are finished. God forsake them. And it's so interesting, because repeatedly in history, this has been our history. This is the story of the Jewish people. The Christians say he's never taking them back. The Christians said for a millennium, they said, you see God doesn't like them. You see they're no longer the chosen people. You know, the early Christians said they were the Jews. They said, we're not the Jews. The Jewish people are not the Jews. We're the Jews. The early Christians called themselves Jews, not Christians. The Germans said they were God's chosen people. Throughout our history, you had all kinds of people saying they're the chosen people and not us. Look, the Muslims say all kinds of things. They say, we aborted the Torah. And really, Yishmael was the chosen son. And they're the future, God's future. We're not the future. You ask them, wait a second, but there are translations of the Torah in Rome that precede Islam. How'd we abort those, right? Now they're stuck. You ask them all kinds of questions. Doesn't work. Okay, so it doesn't work. So what if it doesn't work? They still, throughout our history, people have been saying, that's it. It's God's finished with the Jews. They have no future. You know, why is it that the church is so adamant that Jerusalem become an international state? Why? Because when we declared the state, when we finally had a state, so the Christians had a problem. Throughout the Holocaust and throughout our history, they kept saying, you see, the Jews are being punished by God. You see, he hates them because they didn't accept Osoish. You see, that's the proof that we're right and they're wrong. Along comes the state of Israel, and the Christians, now what are they going to say? So they were silent. The church adopted a position of silence. They said, it's not going to last. And they were very happy when all the states declared war against us. And they said, you see, it's going to be over. That's it. The Muslims are going to wipe them off the map. God doesn't want it. Okay, then that didn't happen. Now what? What are they going to say? So, They were at odds with themselves. What can they say now? So finally they said, well, they have Israel, but they don't have the real Israel. They don't have Bethlehem. They don't have Jerusalem. They don't have the Temple Mount. They don't have all the holy places that says in Tanakh. So you see, God's still not with them. It's all a fake. It's not going to last. They don't have it. Along came the War of 67, and suddenly we do have it. Now they had a problem. What are they going to say now? So right afterwards, they came out with a declaration. It's not allowed to remain in Israel's hands. Jerusalem must become an international city of faith. It can't be Israel's. Why? Because that's their whole claim all along. Can't be that the Jews have Jerusalem, because then what? What are we going to say now? Well, you know what? It's an old claim. Ahasuerus already said it. God doesn't like them anymore. You see, he's forsaken them. Let's go use their temple. Yeah, let's use the vessels of the temple. That's the beginning of the Megillah. We saw some of the rabbis would begin the Megillah by saying, you see the wicked succeed. You see them enjoy tormenting you. You see that there are decrees against you. Don't give up. That's one of the hidden themes of the Megillah. God has a big plan going on here. Well, you begin the Megillah and you see Ahasuerus was also saying, it's over. God doesn't like him anymore. What's God's plan? You see it in the Megillah. You see it play itself out. We're given a sneak preview of what God has in store. God's showing us a small example. And remember, the Megillah was really the final work of Tanakh. That was the work that we took with us into exile. Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi were in the beginning of the Second Temple. This is already after the Second Temple was, they had started rebellion and it was put on pause. So now they're compiling a work that's got a message for us. And the first message we're seeing here is Ahasuerus sat comfortably on his throne. Ahasuerus was confident and said, they're goners. God's not with them anymore. And that's been our history. And that's really the prophecy of Malachi, the final prophet. What does Malachi say to God? God says to Malachi, I love them. I love my kids. I love the Jewish people. And then you'll ask, well, why? There are two brothers. There's Esav, there's Yaakov. Why should you love Yaakov and hate Esav? So Malachi focuses on that. Yeah, I still love him. It's a good question, but I still love him. We learned the Drasha Saran, a whole long speech on why. What's the answer in all that? It's very tempting when we're being tortured and tormented and they're having the time of their life as they're doing it to say, okay, they're right. God's given up on us. You know what? The Jewish people did that. When they went into the exile in Babylon, they came to the Navi Yechezkel and said, gee, I guess we're not the chosen people anymore, are we? We're kicked out of the land of Israel, so we don't have to adhere to the Torah. And the Yechezkel says, no, that's not the way it works. It's not only about the land of Israel. Even without the land of Israel, God has his demands of you, and that's no excuse. You can't leave the Torah. But Ahasuerus here started with a line that would be our history for the next two millennium. Where people are saying, that's it, God's left them. And so Ahasuerus is sitting comfortably on his throne because he figures out, if they haven't been redeemed by now, it's not going to happen. The 70 years are up. And then the rest of the Gemara here goes through the different calculations. We're going to skip forward. We'll skip all the calculations, and we'll skip to Yud Beis Amud Aleph, the third wide line. It says he made his party Chel Paras Umadai for the armies of Persia and Mede, Hapaltamim, the important people. So it seems it says Persia and Mede. It seems like Persia was the prime empire. V'chtiv, and then later on the Megillah says the Malchei Madai of Paras to the kings of Mede and Persia. That verse seems to indicate that Mede was the prime empire. Who was the powerhouse in this relationship? So the truth is there were a duality, tag team effort. Amar Rava Atnuye Atnu Ba'adayu. When they united their forces, they made the following condition. If we appoint the king, you appoint the vice president. And if the king is from you, we appoint the vice president. Meaning that was the balance of powers, and it didn't last for more than three kings. So it didn't work for the Persians and Medes. This lasted three kings, and then that's it. Then it was over. It says Ahasuerus was showing off the honor and the glory, the wealth of his kingdom, the et yikar, and the glory. What's the glory of his kingdom? Amar Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina, melamed shelavash bigdei kuna. That's telling us what was so glorious about him, that he wore the garments of the high priest. He walked into the party wearing the clothing of the Kohen Gadol. So Achashverosh walks into the party and he's wearing the breastplate, he's wearing this gold thing that says Kodesh Lashem. He's wearing all the garments the Kohen Gadol would wear. That's what it means, Yekar. K'tiv acha yekar tifel gdulato. The verse here says the glory, the glory of his greatness. V'ktiv atam nechavot v'l'tifaret. You see that the word glory, tiferet, is a reference to the garments of a Kohen Gadol. It says at the conclusion of these days, he made this massive party, and then he made a small party for the people of Shushan. So the question is, was that a smart thing to do or a dumb thing to do? First to make a long party for all the neighbors, for all his whole kingdom far out, and then a short party for the people of his capital. So we have an ongoing machlokas throughout the Megillah. One says he was a smart king, one says he was a dumb king. If he was a smart king, he explains that it was a good thing that he first said, let me have good relations with the nations that live far away, because the people in his capital, whenever he wants, he could give them gifts and make them happy. So he figured, let me first make the people who live far away happy. Let me get them to like me, and then I'll appease my capital. And the opinion that says he was a dumb king, he says, that's not the way you do things. You want to be a smart king? You should first make sure you have your capital secure. Make sure the people who live around you are faithful to you. Because if you have a rebellion from elsewhere, at least you got to make sure that he's got his capital with him. That's what he should have done first. Shanu Talmidav et Rashbi. The students asked Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, why did God decide that generation deserved the decree of annihilation? You see, they got away with writing a decree. That means something. That means in heaven they held something against us. Why? What did we do wrong? So they asked Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai this. So very often the rabbis would tell their students, you tell me, what do you think? And that's what Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai did. He said to the students, you tell me. They said, because he made a party, and they shouldn't have attended his party, Achashverosh. The Megillah begins by telling us the sin that caused their downfall. They joined the party, invited all the inhabitants of Shushan, and the Jews felt that as good citizens, they should go to the party. So he answered his students, he said, that can't be the reason, because in Kenshub Shushan Yagu Shubchol Olam Kulo Al Yagu. Then the Jews of Shushan might have deserved to be punished. But here there was a decree against all the Jews in the world. That can't be the reason, just because the Jews of Shushan partook of a party. Said it was a sin, it was wrong, but that can't be the reason. So they said, okay, you tell us. He said, because a few decades earlier, Nebuchadnezzar erected a huge idol And in his attempt to ensure that the Jews would no longer be the chosen people, he gathered in all the Jews together with other citizens and said, now you guys bow to this idol or I kill you. And all the Jews bowed. And the fact that the Jews, other than Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, and Daniel, the fact that all of them bowed, that's why God waited. He gave them a few decades. I guess they never did tshuva for that sin. And then God let them have it. That was the decree of Haman. Amru lo. So they said, wait a second, if that's the reason, then why are we still around? Why did God another decree? Does God play favorites? Is it a game? They bowed to the idol, then why weren't we annihilated? Amalahem, he said, well, it goes like this. You think anyone believed that idol was God? They faked. When they bowed to the idol, their hearts weren't to Shemayim. They said, God, we have no choice, it's going to kill us. So they should have been willing to give up their lives like Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. But when they bowed to the idol, they were faking. They didn't really believe the idol was God. They weren't really doing idol worship. It was wrong of them to do it. But they were only doing it externally. So God said, oh, you fake that you're bowing to another God? I'll fake that I'm killing you. So God said, okay, I'll let you have a decree. That's a fake. It'll get undone. But that's the payback. That's what the verse says. God never really declared it. God never really wanted us dead. It says he made his party in the yard in the courtyard of the garden of the orchard of the king. One says, what does it mean? The courtyard of the garden of the orchard. That means some people were fit to be in the courtyard. So he left them in the courtyard. Some people were fit to have their feast in the garden. He put them in the gina, in the garden. Some people were fit in the bitan. He put them in the bitan. He put them there. Different people, depending on their level in the kingdom, got to eat their meals in different places. Another one says, no. He brought them all into his courtyard, but there wasn't enough room. So then he extended it bagina to the garden. There wasn't enough room. Until he went to the point of the orchard, he filled up his whole area. Then he had enough room. Another opinion says he put them in the courtyard and they had room to stroll in the gardens and the orchards as well during this meal. Okay. He adorned the area with chur, karpas, and tchelet. What is chur? Rav amar chare chare. Rav says that, what's chare chare? I don't remember. One second. He made a very, very fine weaving, things that are made with holes. Shmuel amar melat levana etzei alehim. Shmuel says he put white, fine cloth before them. Karpas, one says Karim Shel Pasim, one understanding is it's special pillows he gave them. Al Gilile Chesef, on poles of silver, Vamude Shesh, and ivory poles, Mitot Zahav Chesef, beds of gold and silver. Tanya Rav Yehuda Omer, Haroi LeKesef LeKesef, Haroi LeZahav LeZahav. He said those who were higher nobles, they got gold beds, the lower nobles got silver beds. So then the Gemara says, no, all the beds were made of gold and silver. Okay, let's skip forward. Three lines from the bottom. Gam Vashti Amalka Astam Shtei Nashim. Also, Vashti the queen made a party for women, Bet Amalchut, in the king's house, the kingdom's house. Bet Anashimi Bale, it should have said the women's house. Why does it say in the king's house? Amar Rava Shneim Nidvar Averani Itkavnu. Rava says they both intended to have a party where the men and women would mingle and then all kinds of sins would take place between the men and the women. Meaning, the idea wasn't that it would be a separate party. Why did she make a separate party to get the Jewish men and the Jewish women to come? Everyone's here. Then we'll start having everyone mix and we'll have all kinds of things happening. It wasn't only Achashverosh who wanted his wife to walk in naked. There was a lot more that was supposed to happen at this party. Damre inche, like people say, and this is such an important rule. Ihu bekari. If he's eating big vegetables, Itatei bibutzine. You could assume his wife is also eating small vegetables. Meaning, if he's cheating on her, don't worry, she's cheating on him too. The way of the world is that it goes both ways. So if Achashverosh was thinking, talking about women and thinking about doing all that, so don't worry. If his plan was to bring in Vashti naked, she was also planning a similar thing. There was no coincidence here. So what happened? Bayom Ashvi on the seventh day, Ketov Lev HaMelech Bayayin, when the king's heart was good and filled with wine. The Gemara says, what do you mean? Atu Adash Telotav Li Bebechamra? He's been drinking for 7 days. It's only on day seven that he's had his content of wine. And what happened on day one and two and three? Until now he wasn't content. Amarava, Rava says, no, the Torah is stressing, the Megillah is stressing. Yom HaShvi'i, when it says it was the seventh day, Shabbat Hayam. That day was Shabbos. It wasn't just the seventh day of the party. Sheyisrael lo ochlin meshotin, that we Jews also eat and drink on Shabbos. And what do? After we drink, we take it easy, we sit with the family, we sit with the guests, and matchilin bedivrei Torah. We start talking divrei Torah, we talk about the parsha, we talk about Torah, uvdivrei tishbachot, and we sing songs. What are our songs on Shabbos? What do we sing? Libi uvsari yiranenu lekel chai. My heart and my flesh sing out to Hashem. Tzu mishelo achalnu, the rock from whom we've had this wonderful food, from whom we've eaten. Tzama nafshi lelokim, my soul thirsts, yearns for Hashem. What do we do when we eat and drink on Shabbos? Aval ovdei kochavim, but the pagans, shochlim mishotin, what happens when they're eating and drinking? What do they talk about in their bars? En matchilin elabi divrei tiflut, they start talking about women, they start talking about pornography. Vechen misudato shvato rasha. And that's what happened at that wicked man's meal. Halalu umrim adiot not. So what does Achashverosh and his nobles start talking about? Some say, oh, you should see the women we have in Mead. We have most beautiful women. Halalu umrim parsiot not. Another one say, are you kidding? Come to Persia, you'll see beautiful women. Amalem Achashverosh, Achashverosh said to them, Kli shani mishtamesh, well, the vessel I use, notice how he talks about his wife. The vessel I use, eino lo madi velo parsim. I don't use a vessel woman. I don't use a Persian woman. Ela kasdi, I use a Chaldean woman, a kasdi woman. Ritzonchem lirota, guys, you want to see her? Amru lo'im. They said, yeah. Uvilvad shetei aruma. But you got to show us everything. She's got to come in naked. Shebemida she'adam oded, ba modedin lo. Because Hashem has a way of running the world that He pays people back the exact way they behave. If Hashem would just punish a person, if a guy would do one thing bad and something else would happen to him, he wouldn't see the connection. Hashem purposely pays a person back exactly the way he behaved, in a very similar fashion to the way he behaved, so that he could see Hashem's hand in it. Shaita Vashti al Sha'a, that Vashti the wicked would miviabnot Israel, she'd bring Jewish girls, umafshitana rumot, and force them to be naked, vosaben melacha b'shabbat, and make them work on Shabbos. So the modest Jewish girls were forced by the queen to do work while they were naked in the palace. And you could imagine, there were people around. So these girls were tortured, not only to do work, not only on Shabbos, but to do it in such an immodest way. So she did that. That's why, lefichach nigzar aleha, that's why it was decreed on Vashti, that on that same way, on Shabbos, she was brought before everyone, and she was decreed to be brought in that way, and then she was ultimately killed. Haynu dichtiv, that's what the verse says. Achara devarim ha'ile, the Megillah says, after all of this, kesho chamat ha'melech ha'chashverosh, when ha'chashverosh's anger subsided, zacharet Vashti, he remembered Vashti, ve'et asher asata, and that which she used to do, ve'et asher nigzar aleha. What was decreed upon her? Meaning Achashverosh made the connection in his mind. Achashverosh himself said to himself, Kishem Shasata Kach Nigzar Aleha. He said, you know what? A very interesting thing happened at that party. The very same thing she used to do on the very same day she used to do it happened to her. She used to decree on other women to do this. Ah, I decreed on her. That's what the Megillah says. Achashverosh remembered what Vashti used to do and what was decreed upon her. What does that mean? It's telling you he made that connection. But Queen Vashti refused. So the Gemara asks, Mechdi Pritzuta Avai. The Amamar, Shneem Nidvar Veranit Kavnu. What's her, why, she also wanted this. So why'd she refuse? My time alo atai. So why'd she refuse to come? Amar Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina Mlamed Shepacha Batzarat. So we have an interesting tradition. She suddenly had leprosy. She wasn't as beautiful as she ordinarily was. B'manita Tana B'Gavriel V'Sala Zanav. We have an interesting brisa that says she grew a tail. So Vashti doesn't want to come out that way. When we were children, so the Rebbe would tell us that Vashti was preparing herself. And as she was preparing herself, she'd see a pimple. So she'd grab some makeup, put it on the pimple, and ask her servants, am I ready to go yet? And then they'd say, no, you got another one here. So she'd grab more makeup and put it there. And as she's covering her pimples all over, she's breaking out as she's supposed to go in and show everyone her beauty. Suddenly they say, oh, you won't believe it. You got a tail. And she turns around and, she's got a tail. Okay, whatever that means. So that's what we were taught as kids, and that's what the Medrash also says, on whatever level that means, whether it means literally or not. Okay. Vayitzofa melech me'od. And the king got very upset when she refused to come. Amai dalka bekuli hai. What did he get so upset about? I understand she didn't want to come. He didn't get what he wanted. Okay. What's he getting so upset about? Amarava, Rava says, shalchale. She sent him back quite a line. She didn't just say no. She said to him, Bara Uraya de Abba, you stable boy of my father's. Ah, that's how she's talking to the king in front of all his nobles. She sends back a word and says, you stable boy of my father, Abba Lakavel Alfa Chamra Shati, my father used to drink wine. He'd drink cheers with 1,000 men, meaning he'd drink down 1,000 cups of wine, it says in Daniel. Velo Ravi, and he didn't get drunk. Vahu Gavra Ishti Ishtate Bechamre. And you're a nutcase because of your wine. You don't come close to my father. You're a stable boy. You can't even hold your liquor. So that's what she says to him. She didn't just say, I'm not coming the way you wanted. I can't make it, honey. Sorry, I'm not feeling up to it. No, she told him, you bum. Miyad v'chamato ba'arabo. So then he got upset. Le'yomer ha'melech l'chachamim. So he turned to the chachamim and said, what am I supposed to do? Man chachamim, who are these wise men? The Gemara says, Rabbanan. He went to the rabbis and said, rabbis, tell me, what am I supposed to do now? The rabbi said to himself, what are we going to do? We'll tell him to kill her. Tomorrow he'll be sober. He'll be sober. He's going to be upset. He's going to come back to us and say, give her back. And what are we going to tell him? We'll tell him, let her go. Don't decree anything. Well, you know what? She does deserve it. To talk that way to the king. She does deserve the death penalty. So they said, you know, ever since our temple's been destroyed and we've been exiled, we lost our wisdom. We don't know how to rule in cases that involve the death penalty. We don't know. Go ask the Ammonites, ask the Moabites, ask people who've been settled in their lives, and they'll have the presence of mind to give you a good answer. They didn't want to take the responsibility, they passed the buck. So, he turned to his advisors. And if we'll have another opportunity, we'll pick up here next time.